Put on the whole armor of God that you may be able to stand against the what? The wiles of the devil. For we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against what? Principalities and powers, against the rulers of the darkness of this world, against what? Spiritual wickedness, the Greek says, in the heavenly. The heavenly. Now, when you translate from one language to another, sometimes there isn't a word to fit quite, and you have to add a word. In our Bible, they added a word there. We wrestle against spiritual wickedness in the heavenly. What? The heavenly things or the heavenly places? Well, they added the word places. They might have added the word things. What are the heavenly things? The church, the gospel, the plan of salvation, the Bible. The devil is easily recognized if he gets into the honky-tonks and the beer parlors and the drug dens and all that sort of thing, but he isn't so easily recognized when he gets into the heavenly things. We are fighting a battle. The great controversy is going on in the world, not only out there, not only in the nations of earth that we heard about last night, not only there, but he's working with the heavenly things. One of those heavenly things is the church. The great controversy. I have here a book this morning I'd like to recommend to you. It's called On Borrowed Time. It's one of the most thrilling stories of modern day the battle against sin and how this man overcame it. It's a thrilling book. It's written by one of my favorite singers. In fact, she's going to sing for me again this morning. She got up early enough. She had to have toothpicks, though, to hold her eyes open this morning. Got up real early to sing for us this morning. I'm going to close the meeting. I'm going to have her sing. And I hope you'll get a hold of one of these books and read it. The Great Controversy Between Christ and Satan. We're in it today, brother, sister. We're in it today. And the devil is wroth, seeing that his time is what? Short, and he go about like a roaring lion, seeking whom he may devour. And it's not only out in the world, it's in the church. I want to tell my story first this morning so I get it in. My favorite story in the Bible is about David, that little fellow out there tending the sheep, you remember? He had some brothers too, and one day the Lord told the prophet, go over there and see those sons. And he took a little bottle of oil in his pocket, little flask of oil. It came in little leather bags in those days. And he had that little flask of oil in his pocket, and he went over there and he said to Jesse, I want to see your son. And so he lined them all up and he looked at him and he said, is this all you have? No, he said, I got one little fellow out tending the sheep. Get him, bring him in. So he brought him in and they stood there together, and the prophet Samuel took that little flask of oil out of his pocket and poured it over his head. Now that oil that was made, God told Moses how to make it way back there in Exodus, the 30th chapter. It was composed of all kinds of ingredients from around the country, and Jewish scholars tell me it was the most fragrant oil known to man. And he poured that over his head, and the perfume went out. That smell went out, and his brothers smelled it, and the family smelled it, and then he put the little flask back in his pocket, and he went home, and Israel was at war at the time, and David's brothers were drafted into Saul's army, and they were down there fighting the Philistines, and finally, Jesse said to David, I want you to go down and see how your brothers are getting along in the army. And he probably took a box of Mother's cookies along. You know, army food isn't too good. And he took them down there. And when he got down there, these brothers and all the rest of the army, their knees were applauding them. And he said, what's the matter? He said, see that giant over on the hill? Oh, you remember the story. That great giant challenging the whole armies of God. The great controversy between good and evil. And sometimes we get a little weak-kneed about the controversy. And there he was. And he said, why, how can this man defy God and the armies of God? And you remember, he volunteered to go. And Saul put his armor on him, but it was too ill-fitting, and he had to take it off. And so he picked up some smooth little stones and his little sling, and he went out there armed with his little sling to meet that giant. And that giant was so incensed over them, sending a lad out to him. He pushed his helmet back, and he started running toward that boy, and the boy started running toward him, and with his little rocks, you remember what happened? Oh, I've always tell the young people, he was the first rock and roll hero. He took the little rocks and he made the giant roll. And he took off his head, you know. You remember the story? And then Saul, he got a little jealous of this boy because the women began to sing about him. Saul has killed his thousands, and David's his tens of thousands. Oh, my, what a letdown that was. If you want to get somebody jealous, just get the women singing about another man. And so Saul tried to take his life. You remember, threw a javelin at him, and David fled. But there were 120 people fled with him and said, hey, David, we believe that you're going to be the next king of Israel. We believe you're God's anointed. We're going to be loyal to you. And so he went around, he hid in various places. You remember, he finally got to the cave of Adullam. And the cave of Adullam, he was hiding back in there with his men in the dark recesses of that cave. And Saul said, we've got to get this fella. And so he called out his army to go after him. The army. And in that army were David's own brothers. And they got to thinking it over one night. And they said, hey, this is a great note. Here we are in the army to fight the battle against the enemies of God. And now we're called out to take our own brother's life. And you know what they did? That night they went A-W-O-L. You know what that is? Well, you people been in the army know what it is. They went A-W-O-L, and they went in search of their brother. And they came to that cave, and they saw footprints in there. I can just hear them, can't you? Getting into that cave, echoing there. David! Our brother, are you here? David says, shh, quiet. The enemy found us. We're trapped here in this cave. Get back in the dark recesses of this cave. David! Our brother, are you here? David said, that voice sounds familiar. You wait here, I'll go out. Went out there in the cave, opening of that cave, and there were his own brothers. His own brothers! They remembered that smell, that ointment that was put on his head. And those brothers threw their arms around each other, and David wept on their neck, and he brought there the father. They brought the father and the mother of David. They all hid in that cave together. They pledged allegiance to David. And David went back into the cave, and he wrote some of the Psalms in there. And one of them he wrote was that beautiful Psalm, Psalms 133, it says, behold, how good and how pleasant it is for brethren to dwell together in unity. It's like the precious ointment that was put upon the head of Aaron, ran down on his beard, dripped off onto his garments. It's like the dew of Hermon. Oh, that's beautiful. Say, God has called the church into the world to be a sweet-smelling savor to the world. The unity of the church. Jesus talked about it in John 17. He prayed for the unity of the brethren. You see, in the Adventist church, we believe in what we call theologically the universal priesthood of man. What do we mean by that? Well, we just simply mean that every person in the Seventh-day Adventist church is a preacher. He's a priest. He's a witness for God. He's to help spread the message throughout the world. We're united in this thing. Oh, well, some of us are paid to do it full time. But we're all to do it, aren't we? This gospel of the kingdom shall be what? Preached in all the world for a witness unto all nations, and then shall the end come. He's called us to make disciples. Yeah, he had 12 disciples. But he called the whole church to make disciples in the world. That's what it says in Matthew 28. Disciples of all men. That's what he's called us to do. And so every person in the church is to do that. And in the early days of our church, Ellen White promoted the idea and said we ought to have a people out there that are not dependent on the payroll, not dependent on the tithe. And they were called self-supporting workers. Self-supporting workers. And she talked about them, and we established some self-supporting schools and self-supporting workers. Today we have the ASI. We heard about it last night. What a thrilling thing it is to see businessmen. I was over Hong Kong not long ago. Andrews University sent me over to talk to Brother Chan over there. He has a great big 10-story building in Hong Kong where he manufactures the alligator shirts. He has about 1,000 employees. And on the top of that building, as we got near there, there was a great big sign in 4-foot letters that said, "Closed from sundown Saturday night, Friday night to sundown Saturday night." That great shirt factory. Talk about a witness for God. There it was. I thought, what a wonderful thing. The ASI, business people, men and women everywhere, preaching the gospel of Jesus Christ. That was the plan. But you know, every plan that God has made, the devil has tried to pervert. He's tried to put a substitute in for every plan that God has. Well, many of the early prophets in the Bible supported themselves. Some of them were fishermen. Some of them were tent makers. Some of them were government workers, like Daniel. He got his pay from the government. But he was a witness for God. He was a prophet for God. The Acts of the Apostles has an entire chapter on Paul as a self-supporting worker. Acts of the Apostles 3:46 to 358 tells all about this self-supporting worker. Thrilling what he did. Years ago, I attended Madison College, that self-supporting educational institution. And that spawned other small schools all over. A lot of our early men got their education in some of those small self-supporting schools. When we went down there, I worked my way through part of the school. 10 cents an hour. And we had soybeans for everything. We had soybean milk and soybean gravy and soybean roast and soybean everything. I got so soybeaned out, I never wanted to see another soybean. You know, but the devil took those self-supporting institutions, so-called, and they didn't become self-supporting anymore. Some of them, they began to talk to the people and say, "Hey, we're better than the rest of the church because we're self-supporting institutions." And that happened down at Madison when my dad was there, and he said, "None of this for me. God called this denomination into the world." And that's when we left. And that's when I run the old Ford in the river that I told you about the other morning. Yes, these independent now, we don't call them self-supporting anymore because they're not self-supporting. We have another name for them, some of them. We call them independent ministries. God intended that the independent ministries ought to be supportive of the church. You see? But the devil in this great controversy, we wrestle against spiritual wickedness in the heavenly things. The church is one of the heavenly things. The Lord added to the church daily such as should be saved. That's a heavenly thing. God's church, God's denominated people, God's remnant people, the church of God. And so he's perverted that. And often these ministries are built around a few folks who are critical of God's church. Critical of the leadership. Have a little chip on their shoulder and they get started some way in an independent ministry. I had a notebook for a long time with 100 of them in. And now it's way past that. I'm learning some new ones. Since I'm here in Nebraska, Kansas, I've learned about 2 or 3 new ones. And even my mail here, I'm getting some. I'm getting some here. And so I'm having to add to that list. The devil is working. You see, he's working not only to destroy God's church from the outside, but he's working to destroy it from the inside. That's what he's doing. Now, you may think I'm a little hard on that. We've got the good and the bad in the independent ministry. We've got hundreds of wonderful people in the Adventist Church and independent ministries who are doing a wonderful work for God. Wonderful work. But we've got some that are like the eroding worms within the church trying to eat up the church. And it's those I want to talk a little about this morning, because sometimes it's hard to distinguish between the true and the false, because there's so much truth mixed in with the false. That's the way the devil has of trying to divert the gospel of Jesus Christ. He puts the false and the true together. The Chinese have a name for that. God's plan for the church was that we ought to be a united group of people. John 17, "And for their sakes I sanctify myself, that they also might be sanctified through the truth. Neither pray I for these alone, but for them also which shall believe on me through their word, that they all may be one. As thou, Father, art in me, and I in thee, that they also may be one in us, that the world may believe." What? He wants this unity that the world may believe that thou hast sent me. Brethren, one of the signs and one of the avenues through which God gives the message to the world is through the sweet-smelling savor. That oil of holy ointment that was put on David's head is a symbol of the sweet-smelling savor that should go up from the unity of the church. All of these different ingredients that were put into that holy anointing oil came from different places, and they were put into that apothecary's vessel, it was called, a bowl for stirring it all up, and they all lost their separate identity. And they became a part of the whole, the ointment. And it sent forth a savor to the world. If I should go down the line here this morning, I'd find some Germans and some Scotch-Irish. And I'd find some Welsh. And I'd find a few black people. And the Lord took them all and He puts them in the apothecary's vessel, the church, and He stirs them up with the rod of the three angels' messages. And out of that there comes a unity and a smell of holy ointment to the world. That's what He's doing. The church is God's testimony to the world of what Jesus came to do. The church. No wonder the devil's trying to destroy it. He's trying his best to upset it. And he's working not only from without, but from within. Well, I want to put some circles on the blackboard again this morning. And help you a little bit to understand a few things. Some people came to me yesterday and said, "Hey, those circles really helped me. I understand a lot of things." So it doesn't take much of illustration to help to make things clear. I'm going to start with that same circle I had yesterday morning. This is truth. This is Christ at the center of this circle. And the Bible reveals Him in context. That's what makes truth. The Bible in context. The specific, clear statements of the Bible You see, and the way to understand what the Bible teaches is to take the general teaching of the Bible. We were taught that in college. Take the general teaching of the Bible, then take those obscure texts that don't seem to quite fit, and give a little study to them and see how they fit into the general context. Because when God gave revelation, He didn't contradict Himself, did He? No. It's all in harmony. And when He gave the spirit of prophecy, in context, this was also the Spirit of God in revelation, wasn't it? You believe that? Oh, I'm glad I heard here at this camp meeting most all the speakers used the spirit of prophecy. Say, you don't hear that everywhere. You don't hear that everywhere. We got some churches out in my territory who the preachers don't use it anymore. The Adventist Advantage. By the way, I gave a wrong thing here the other morning. Somebody checked me up. You know, it's good we have people that are good checkers. I said the Adventist Advantage, you know, was in an article in Time Magazine. In 1963, I said, I misspoke, it was 1966. 1966, October 28th, the center spread said, we've got the Adventist Advantage. I wanted to correct that this morning. And so we believe the Adventist Advantage. The lesser light, to be sure, but it points us to the greater light. I never read the spirit of prophecy, but what it points me to the Bible. The greater light. And so Seventh-day Adventists have developed this spirit of prophecy. I find an awful lot of statements that people are quoting around about what the spirit of prophecy says. And I had a fellow come into my little apartment the other night, and he said, Brother Hackett, you've got that computer there with all of the statements of the spirit of prophecy on. He said, there's one that I'm quoting that I want to know if you can find it. I haven't been able to find it. I said, what is it? It's the statement that says that when the Adventist Church people apostatize from it, that the ranks are going to be made up from people who are in the prisons. Well, I said, I don't remember reading that. I'll put that in my computer. And I put it in my computer every way in the world I could. And I never did get it come up. Never did get it come up. I kind of doubt if it's there. We got a lot of apocryphal statements of the spirit of prophecy. Let's be careful about that. Let's take the general teachings of the spirit of prophecy the same as we do the Bible. You see, when we're going to find truth. And so here we have this center. The inner circle. Don't forget that. When you go home, this is the inner circle, what everybody's to believe. Now, around that circle, and of course I tell the preachers when I talk to them in workers' meetings, which I do quite a bit around the country. I don't know what's the matter with this chalk, but it doesn't work very good. Around that, there's another big circle. You see? Now, yesterday morning, I put the different teachings of the church in that circle. This morning, I'm going to put something else in that circle. Because here is where the heart of our message is. This is what we ought to preach on. But sometimes we get out here and we get into the area of speculation. Speculation. A lot of people are preaching things that are speculation. It might be so, and it might not be so. You see? It could be that way. And then we have syllogism. I told you what that was the other morning, so I'm not going to repeat that. Syllogism. And then we have allegories. Some of the so-called intellectuals today say Genesis is just an allegory. They just wanted people to understand what a great God they had, and so they concocted the whole story of Genesis to do that. Allegory. Analogy.
People preach a lot of analogy. This was so back in the Bible, so it's an analogy, it must be so now. Got to be careful of that. It might be true, and it might not be true. Analogy and comparisons. Comparisons. It's dangerous to compare one thing with another unless it fits completely. It might be so, and it might not be so. That area. And then I'm going to put in here a conjecture. Conjecture. And a deduction. And I'm going to put something else in that you've got to be careful about. Symbolism. Symbolism. Be sure the symbols fit. Be sure. And another one that I could put in, typology. Typology. Be sure the types and shadows are correct. We have a preacher in this denomination that goes all over the country. He's a specialist in typology, and he preaches all kinds of stuff. We had him out at our camp meeting not long ago, and the people came up after it and said, "Where did you get that?" It was a figment of his imagination. He didn't have any Bible proof for it. It was beautiful. Lovely typology. But he couldn't have any basis for it. So we have to be careful of that. Oh, yeah, we believe in types and shadows. Adventists talk about the types and the antitype. There are good ones, too. We have to be a little careful of that when we preach. And so I tell the preachers, you know, it's all right to preach out here in this outer circle, provided you tell people you're out there. That's why yesterday morning, when I was preaching, I told you this is Hackett heresy. You see, it might be that way and it might not. I'm kind of in the outer circle. I have a sermon I preach on the 144,000. Whew, it's a wing-dinger. And when I preach it, people say, "Man, I never heard anything like that in my life before." When I get through, I say, "Now this is Hackett heresy." I am telling them I'm in the outer circle. You don't have to believe it to be saved. You don't have to believe it like I do. It appears that way to me, and I give them all the reasons why I believe it the way I do. And we've got a lot of preachers, and mostly these people that are turning out all kinds of mimeograph stuff. A lot of it is in the outer circle. A lot of it's in the outer circle. It's speculation. It's deduction. It's comparisons. The Jewish leaders were corrupt, therefore the leaders of the day today are corrupt. You see, doesn't follow. Doesn't follow. Got to be careful of that. The outer circle. So if you're going to preach in the outer circle, tell people you're out there. I like to preach more in the inner circle, don't you? That inner circle is where the truth is. It's stable truth, Brother Mills. It's truth that we can ask everybody to believe. It's the general teachings of God and the Bible. Some people can take an obscure text and they can build a whole philosophy around that text, you know, that might be true and it might not be true. Might be. We had a series of Sabbath school lessons some time ago on Revelation. The book of Revelation. It was written by a very competent theologian. And I got to camp meeting about that time down in a Potomac conference. And I had all the night meetings, and I had all 11 o'clock hours, and he had all the night meetings. And the people started coming to me, "Well, Brother Hackett, we never heard anything about this anymore. This doesn't agree with DNR. What about all this?" Well, I said, "He's in the outer circle. He's in the outer circle. It might be so, and it might not be so." You see, you don't have to believe it that way to be saved. So we have to be a little careful of that. And I've discovered that a lot of these people are in the outer circle. They're deducting a lot of things. They take one little statement out of the spirit of prophecy and they build the whole thing on it. Or they collect out of the spirit of prophecy all those things that were derogatory that Ellen White wrote against the church, and they print a whole paper with that. And then they pick out some fella in our schools that's a little bit off. And they tell you the whole denomination is that way. Following it. Whole denomination's that way. Deduction. And so I'm a little worried about these independent ministries that are in that area. In fact, my spirit of prophecy quotes tell me they're not of God. Not of God. All right, let me give you a little picture of these people. Bert, come up here and help me erase this, will you? I got to talk while you're erasing. You fix that up for me. Nice to have a helper, isn't it? These people have a very interesting way of going about things. But I want to show you kind of what happens to both the left wing and the right wing in the Seventh-day Adventist Church. I'm talking now about those that Satan is using in this great controversy. There are a lot of good ones. And so across the top of this board, I'm going to put on this side here, the right wing. And over here, I'm going to put the left wing. Now these are extremes, of course. These are the two ends. There are people all the way in between. Here's the center. This is where the cross is. This is the inner circle. Here, the center. And here's the right wing and the left wing. We've got them. Every church has them. And every church, the more they develop, the more they get that kind of thing. The right and the left wingers. And so these right wingers over here, they say we're conservative. Ultra-conservative. They're the rule people. We talked about rules and principles. They're the rule people over here. Ultra-conservative. And these people over here, they're the pluralists. I hope I spelled that right. I'm depending on my computer now. It has a speller on it, you know. So I'm not as good a speller as I once was. I can just put my letter on there and press the speller and it goes right down the little cursor and tells me what words I've misspelled. That's a great help to a fellow that isn't too good at spelling. The pluralist. What's the pluralist? The pluralist says you can believe anything you want and be a Seventh-day Adventist. Anything you want. And so these people over here, the conservatives, they say we got to help them make the church better. We've got to reform the church. And so they change their focus. What's the focus? The focus of the Advent message is on the world, isn't it? Go ye into all the world and what? Preach the gospel. These people say, oh no, we're going to spend our money on the church. We got to change the church. And so these pluralists over here, they say, well, we've got to have more liberty, more freedom. And so these people over here, they want a different form of government. They want the congregational form of government. What's that? They don't want anything to do with a conference. They don't want anything to do with the sisterhood of churches. They don't want anything to do with a tithe system. Tithe system goes into a treasury. We want to send our tithe wherever we want to send it. We don't want anybody telling us what to do. So they want a congregational form of government. Here we are. Okay, and now these people over here, the focus, you see, is on the church now and on the leadership of the church. Ah, they're corrupt. And so they fall out with the church. They have their own camp meetings now. Up our way, they have their own Sabbath school quarterlies. They have their own Review and Herald. They got their own papers. We can't trust the church anymore. Got to have all our own. So they fall out with the church. And then they fall out with leadership. Hey? And then they abuse the spirit of prophecy. See? Abuse it. Oh, they don't deny it. They're great exponents of it. Spirit of prophecy. But they pick only those things which they want. And when I read to them some of the things they don't look at very carefully, they say, well, but I can read you something else. You see? They're always dodging. Always dodging. Abuse the spirit of prophecy. And then they want the tithe. Use of tithe. See, they got to have money to carry on their work. One man said, I'm getting $278,000 a week through the mail from Seventh-day Adventists. $278,000. Brethren, no wonder the church is having a problem with its finance. If the devil can upset the tithe program, if he can upset our financial program in this church, you know, that's part of his plan. Part of his plan. And so these left-wingers over here, they're extreme too, you see. They're way over at this other end. They've changed their focus. Their focus is now on liberalizing the church. We gotta liberalize it. These preachers, you know, these leaders, they're too restrictive. We gotta have a broad concept of this church. And so we get so broad that we get flat-headed. Broad. And then they fall out with the church. And they fall out with the leaders. And then they want to pay their tithe or not pay it. Not pay it. The surveys that we're doing, let's face the facts now. It isn't nice. Let's face the facts. If you take a survey of the people of some of our churches, you find less than 50% are faithful in their tithe. Less than 50%. Offerings? Oh, they pay their offering. Some of them are sending their kids to school on the offerings they would pay. They're using the offerings for all kinds of things. One fellow said, I use my offerings completely just to send to young people who graduating from college. I give them gifts and I give them birthday gifts and I give all kinds of stuff out of my tithe and offerings. Didn't the Lord tell us what to use the tithe for? I was chairman of the tithe committee when we revamped the tithe program. We'd gotten a little careless, perhaps, in the church about the use of the tithe. And we had a whole 2 or 3 year study. I was chairman of that committee, and we tightened up on the use of our tithe at the General Conference. Said, we're not going to mix it with other funds anymore. This tithe's going to be separate. All right, and then they deny the inspiration of the spirit of prophecy. You see, the devil doesn't care whether he has us on this side or that side. If he can drive us to extremes, he has us. And that's what he's trying to do, to destroy the church. Oh man, I just got started here. My time's almost up. Let me read you just a few little things. You will take passages in the testimonies that speak of the close of probation, of the shaking among God's people, and you will talk of a coming out from this people, of a purer, holier people that will arise. Now, all this pleases the enemy. We should not needlessly take a course that will make differences or create dissension. We should not give the impression that if our particular ideas are not followed, it is because the ministers are lacking in comprehension and in faith and are walking in darkness. Selected Messages, Book 1, 179. Oh, there are a host of statements like that, all through the Spirit of Prophecy, that these people completely ignore. I sat down in the headquarters of one of these offices the other day, and I said, "Brother, you want to reform the church. You want to make the church better. So do I. So do I. I want the church to be more sound. I want it to be more theologically correct. But there are two ways to do it. One of them is to tell everybody how bad they are." You know, I found that hasn't worked. That doesn't work. I had a dog once, and I tried to teach him to roll over. And if he didn't do it, I kicked him. And it just didn't work. But when I got a little candy or a little sugar or a little something he liked, and I tried to teach him to roll over, I taught him in three times. I said, there are two ways to reform the church. One is to try to hit everybody on the head, and the other is to tell them when they do right. And I found the second way is an awful lot better. I said, you could do what you're doing. Why don't you write out in your paper and tell about the thousands of seminars, revelation seminars that are going on around the world, and how the hundreds are coming in. Tell them about those 3,000 that were baptized down there in the South Philippines. And tell them it was mostly laymen who did the work. Tell them the facts. Tell them the good things. And you'll get other people to want to do it too. If you want to reform the church, that's the way to do it. That's the way to help. The devil would like to destroy the church. Press together are the words of our divine instructor. Unity is strength. Disunion is weakness and defeat. Volume 6, 293. May we not lose our way, brethren and sisters. May we not lose our way. I have a lot more I'd like to say about this. In fact, I have about 9 sermons on it now. I'm so concerned about the unity of God's church. I'm concerned that we send forth a sweet-smelling savor to the world. I'm concerned that every individual member not be a dead fly in the ointment. I'm concerned that the church move forward mightily. We got all kinds of people. And sometimes our dear believers don't understand the problems. I didn't. I never condemned these people for a long time. I was kind of with them until I got into the churches. I saw the fruit of their labor. And then I began to differentiate between truth and error. It's sometimes a very fine line. Now, let me say this. There are an awful lot of good people there. They are deceived people. But they're good people. And I'm so thankful that we're able to rescue a lot of those good people. I went into a church not long ago, and I had 5 sermons. I've been doing that. 5 sermons every weekend in those churches where they have a problem. And there was a doctor's wife there. And she was collecting all the tithes she could get from all the members and sending it over to this headquarters. All she could get. All the offerings she would get. She told me in 1 year, she gave them more than $50,000. And I preached these 5 sermons, and she came to me with tears in her eyes. She said, "Brother Hackett, you've turned me around in 5 sermons. I'll never do it again. I see now that truth is mixed with error." That's what the text says. We wrestle against spiritual wickedness in the heavenly things. Let's remember the sweet-smelling savor. Jesus was called the sweet-smelling savor of the world, wasn't he? What kind of a smell does your church have? What kind of an odor does it have? Does it have an odor of unity and love and kindness and sweetness and orthodoxy? That's a bad word, orthodoxy. Does it have all of that? What kind of a smell does it have? What kind of a smell do you have? Oh, I believe you ought to be a critic of the church. I'm a critic of my church. I believe we ought to speak up when we see things that are wrong, don't you? We ought to see things that are wrong. We ought to speak up. But I'm doing it as a loyal member of the church. I'm not attacking people's character. I'm attacking their doctrine, their deeds. Let's be careful how we do it. Let's do it in the spirit of Jesus. Jesus did it in several ways. Mostly, he did it, you know, in the way that would be kindness. He taught truth instead of condemning them. But once in a while, he took the whip. And divinity flashed through the humanity. Four times the spirit of prophecy says that. Divinity flashed through the humanity. And he said, take your money changers hence. So there comes a time in the church sometimes when we have to say to these brethren, please take your doctrine hence. I had a little church. When I retired, the brethren said, we got a little church of six members down here. And right next to it, we had one of these so-called self-supporting. They're not self-supporting. They're leeches on the church. One of those institutions right next door. And they come in and they filled my church. That little church of six members, they just filled it up. And they began to teach the Sabbath school class and everything else. And here I was sent down there to be the pastor of this church. What in the world was I going to do? Well, one of them got up in the Sabbath school class and he began to tell them all the things that were wrong with the leadership of the General Conference, how bad the General Conference president was, and I stood it as long as I could. And then I got out my cord. And I got up and I said, I'm the pastor of this little church. The conference has given me the authority here. This is the Seventh-day Adventist church. And brother, we won't have any of that kind of teaching here. I'm sorry about that. I love you, but I don't love what you're saying. And unless you can teach the Sabbath school class in a different manner, you can sit down and I'll take over. And that's what I did. And he sat down. I never had any trouble after that. And I built that little church up from six. I told the conference, I'll take that church over, provided when it gets to be 100 members, you'll put a pastor in. And they laughed me to scorn. I turned it over to them with 106 members. God is still working in this church, brethren. Go you into all the world. Let's don't have the focus. You know, totally on the church. Let's have the focus on giving the gospel to the world. Merle, come and sing for us, will you? I want all of you this morning to be careful what you read. You've got a circular file at your house. Put a lot of this stuff in it. The president told me the other night he likes to get it in the wintertime so he can put it in the fireplace. Good deal. Let's be faithful. Let's send forth a savor to the church. What do you say? Will you do it? God bless you.
God sent His Son. They call Him Jesus. He came to love, heal, and forgive. He bled and died. To buy my pardon,
like that. Thing like that, we don't need any preaching. God bless you. Let us stand for prayer. Father, we thank Thee for the sweet-smelling savor of the church. We thank Thee for the unity of concept and doctrine. We thank Thee for the unity of Jesus Christ. We thank Thee for the love You've placed in our hearts. As we go from this service this morning, let us recognize we're in the great controversy. Let us put our hearts and our hands in the hands of Jesus, that we may move forward with the finishing of the work and hasten the day when we can be together in glory, for Jesus' sake. Amen.
You have been listening to another special American Cassette Ministries presentation. This recording has been digitally reprocessed from the original audio cassette in order to make this CD available. The audio quality was improved as much as possible. International copyright American Cassette Ministries, all rights reserved. To order CDs or audio cassettes of this or other presentations, or for a free catalog, please call toll-free 1-800-233-4450. International calls, please dial 717-652-7000. You may also order from our secure website at www.americancassette.org. There you will discover the largest selection of genuine Adventist preaching available. American Cassette Ministries is not a one-man band. It's an orchestra of outstanding speakers who are all on the same theological page. You can trust ACM. There's no compromise here. If American Cassette Ministries has been a blessing to you, why not take a moment just now and send us a note or an email with your testimony? Our email address is info@americancassette.org. We'll share it with the speakers and volunteer workers to encourage them. Your prayers and financial support are important to ensure the continuation of this ministry as we help prepare America and the world to meet Jesus Christ. He's coming soon.